Hello?
Hi.
You look terrible.
Thanks.
You want to talk about it?
Why? So you can go and tell your boss how much of a loser I am?
What? You think I'm some kind of spy?
Well, are you? What are you doing here otherwise?
Could I ask you the same question? If you can come around the Morites' point of view, why can I?
That's not it.
What then?
I don't know. It's odd you being with Lex, that's all. Turning your life upside down, giving up everything. Thought it would have been something else.
Welcome to Series 4, Episode 39 of Conversation on Eagle Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance, and joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hello.
Sabine.
Hi.
And Tamsin.
Hello.
With episode notes done by Matt and myself. So 39, the screenplay was done by Marie McNeil. It was directed by Ian Moon, and the episode synopsis were read out by Liz.
Jay worries about Ram's next move. Mouse, Sammy, and Pride continue to sneak around for game credits, and Ebony finds out that she's been deceived.
Alright, so Jay feels lost after leaving the Technos, despairing about his vision of a better life. But Selim reminds him that they wouldn't have the hospital without him, and urges him, along with Siva later, to think about what is best for him now, not other people. Even if this means that he has to give up his dreams and leave the city. Before making up, however, Jay does take out his dark mood on both Siva and Lex, accusing her of being a spy, as they simply can't understand why she would turn her life upside down for Lex of all people. So yeah, panel, a few bits here. What do you make of Jay's complete loss of purpose, taking his feelings out on others, and Celine's supportive words?
Did he ever have a purpose, is my question.
A glorious one.
His
purpose was for Ram to look at, wasn't it?
Right. Well, I mean, at this point, that is the question. But I think the problem here, where this falls down really, is these nebulous ideas that Jay had about making the world a better place. But they were we understood how Amber and Bray wanted to improve the world. They were very clear. They gave us information, like Danny told us the things that she wanted to do to make the world better with the Bill of Rights. But with Jay, it's just been this nebulous idea that it's okay to kidnap people, forcibly enslave them, drag them across the country. But it's for this like higher thing. It's like this higher calling that everything is leading to, and it doesn't land, because up to this point he has spoken so nebulously about these ideals that he has for the city and to improve the city, and I think that they have tried to retcon his involvement in the city, because a couple of episodes ago when we got more information about his dead girlfriend, he was talking about how, you know, there was fighting in the city and how he was a tribe leader. And now it's like, I want to improve the city so much. And it just doesn't land. None of it lands for me. It just doesn't work. And also, again, he shows this such a nasty side of himself with the questions that he asks Siva about her relationship with Lex, and the idea that, like, Jay is the only person who could have these feelings for somebody, and that, of course, like, Siva's a fake, and it just shows you exactly what we've thought of him this entire time. Anyway, I'll get off the mic now.
Which you're absolutely correct.
Thank you.
It just makes no sense why he gets mad at Siva and why he goes this way about Lex. Because, yes, let's face it, there's a lot of people who feel this way about Lex, but...
But, like, Jay doesn't really know Lex. They have not really interacted at all.
It's just complete stupidity, really. It's like he's just thinking, okay, but why are you with someone like that? Like, why are you? He's acting like, why are you with a vert?
Yeah.
Even though, you know, that's what he wants to be.
I think this could have worked because I think on paper, the concept of this moment, Jay feeling he has no purpose, he's not able to help these rebels, he's stuck in limbo, he's not able to get information from the technos that he can use against them. So he has nothing to contribute to the bigger picture. So it's like, what am I even doing? You know, and the idea of him taking that on other people, questioning Siva, I think it works on paper, but in execution, of course, none of this works. And I think the conversation he has with Siva could have been done better to really explore what it is he thinks of her and what she's doing, even holding up a mirror to his own face. Because on one hand, you could suggest that he's judging her because he thought of Siva as a very shallow person who chose a man for protection and protection only. Like, he was aware that she wasn't that into Ram, but it kept her safe and it kept her elevated. So that's why she was with him. So now he's wondering why she gave all that up for a guy like Lex. And that's actually a good question. And it says what he thought of Siva as a person and would explain why she gets offended. Like, I'm sorry, excuse me. You know, you didn't think I was deep enough to care about somebody or want more from a relationship than to be someone's trophy. That relationship could have been really good and, you know, like a meaty conversation of the way they viewed each other. And, or you could have held up a mirror to his face that Siva was willing to give up her position because she fell in love. And Jay wasn't willing to give up anything when he fell in love. You know, and he's lashing out at somebody who did act on those feelings. Even if it meant she didn't know what was going to happen next, even if it meant she wasn't going to be safe, she chose love over all her other ambitions. And he feels some sense of guilt that he couldn't do the same. He found love as he, of course, after Ebony betrayed him, he called it love, and wasn't willing to give up anything for her. Basically said straight to her face, you're not worth giving up what I want to be with you. This could have been an interesting conversation. As it is, I was literally confused when he started snapping at her, and I was like, did I miss an episode? What are we talking about? Where did this come from? Why is he going off on her? And the dialogue they gave him to do so didn't make a lot of sense. It really felt like it came out of left field that he's asking her, what do you, I just don't get you and Lex. And it's like, why do you care? Like, what does it matter to you who Siva's dating? Like, why do you care? Better dialogue could have actually explored what his train of thought was that he comes out and asks her what she's doing, you know? But you know, that's just season four in a nutshell. Good on paper, terrible execution. And Celine's supportive words just come off again. Even Celine's supportive words could have worked. If Jay was actually really useful to these guys, then you could totally understand why she wants to stay on his good side, you know, and make him feel good about what he's contributing because it's useful to them. But, given the fact that what Jay has brought to the team does not feel actually all that useful, it makes her seem like a sycophant, and it feels like the narrative trying to tell us, no, Jay's a really good guy. It's the narrative reminding us through Celine's lips that we're supposed to like him and he's necessary and we shouldn't want him to go. Because yeah, I was like, what do you mean they wouldn't have a hospital without him? Ram had already told her she could have her frickin' hospital before Jay ever got involved. Like, Celine went to Ram, said, we need a hospital, and Ram said, okay, you'll get a hospital. So regardless of Jay's help, Ram was still going to deliver the same amount of measly equipment and medicines to Celine for her hospital. That's what he was always going to give her. And she would have had the same reaction, like, oh my gosh, what are we supposed to do with this? Jay is not the reason she has a hospital, but the narrative wants us to think that he is.
I mean, when you look at it like that, he could have done so much more. Because he was the general, so he could have done more and got them extra supplies or something like that. But yeah, you're so right. It's just the narrative constantly reminding us all the time. And I want to pick up on a point that you made about Siva and Jay. And I think it's really interesting that he comes out and asks her, he accuses her of being a spy, basically, and that she's still in the employ of Ram. And I think that tells us a lot more about him than anything about her, because it shows where he thinks people's motivations are, and that essentially there are no sort of, apart from him and the Morats, no one can sort of do anything that isn't double dealing, if that makes sense. So there must be something behind why Siva's blown up her life. It can't just be love.
I don't think I'll ever fully understand Jay.
Mm.
And his lack of logical thought.
The writers don't understand him. The writers don't understand this character. And that's why so much of this, because you come to a point where you're like, ah, this could be good. Like Liz says, like you say, like Lance says, this could be a good nugget of something that we can hold on to. But the writers kind of breeze past it because they never want him to look bad. They never want him to be in the wrong. They always want him to have these higher motivations. And the thing is, Jay gets compared a lot to Bray. But the difference between Bray and Jay was, especially in the early days, is that Bray made a lot of mistakes. He made a lot of mistakes. If you look back at that whole Trudy being kidnapped and what went down with Brady, he made a catalogue of errors.
Yeah.
If you think about what happened when Amber and Trudy got kidnapped in season 3, it was a disaster and he completely fell apart. He was not perfect. And that's why he works, because he's struggling all the time and he has to choose between the people that he loves and the job he has to do. And that really is hard for him. We see him go through this this trauma. We don't get any of that with Jay.
See, there's a missing component. It's not just that Bray made mistakes. It's that he was called out on his mistakes.
Yes.
All of the time. Even when we were like, dude, we're on Bray's side. Other people weren't. Other people didn't give him, but they didn't let him get away with these mistakes. They were mad at him. There was conflict over these choices he made. So even if he was the Mary Sue of the tribe, he wasn't written like one because he wasn't the answer to everything. And people were always on Bray's case about every choice he made. They were always on him. There was always somebody to be like, yo, I think you're wrong. Yo, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's just like, oh my gosh, you know, nobody calls Jay out for anything ever.
No, it's always the best idea. His plans are always perfect. He's so selfless. It's just, it makes you want to be sick in a bucket.
They always give him the benefit of the doubt. They're always just like, well, his intentions are good, so it doesn't matter what happened, you know? And it's like, he's not the person who should be getting this kind of benefit of the doubt, you know? Yeah. When you think about the other characters in their lives and the other people they've known longer, he gets so much grace from this group of people.
And it's so unearned.
It annoys me so much. Just a giant difference between, you know, the whole, you know, I tend to compare Jay to Luke character-wise.
Yeah.
Luke would have never gotten the amount of grace that Jay gets.
But Luke was barely tolerated by most people.
Yeah. He was barely tolerated. He was lucky to be alive.
And they weren't afraid to remind him of that all the time. Yeah. That you're lucky we let you live. Even while he was actively every day trying to do something to make life easier for others and try to help.
Exactly. And he did so much to help them. Whereas Jay, he's just, he walked out on Ram, whoop-de-friggin-oo. Because that's
I mean, to be honest, though, Jay walking out on Ram is like, you know when you're at work and you get the sense you're going to get sacked, so you hand in the resignation before it happens? Yep. That is essentially Jay and Ram.
Yeah, absolutely.
He resigned before he was gotten rid of.
Yeah, and not even because he was that level of appalled at what Ram was doing.
Exactly. He was just mad he wasn't getting what he was promised.
Yeah, that gets forgotten so
often.
At least
not in the way he was promised.
He wasn't upset with what the Technos actually did. It's just that he was supposed to gain something from their actions, and he wasn't. And he was like, oh, he threw his dolly out the pram.
Mm-hmm.
Pride, I didn't see you there, mate.
Dealing with the enemy? How low can you go, Lex?
It's not what it looks like.
Well, have you totally lost it? What would Celine say if she found out about this? Her own deputy sheriff?
She's not gonna find out, though, is she?
Okay. I'll go with that. As long as you tell me why you're deliberately playing into Ram's plan.
It's business.
And business is booming. Come on, Lex. You can't deal with the technos. Hand him over.
And uses the excuse of taking the moral high ground to confiscate the credit, which he uses to feed his own addiction to the game. So yeah, any thoughts on the scam plotline and Pride using it for his own gains?
Well, this is talking about the scam plotline. As we move forward with Lex, this is the crumbs that he's going to get from the table. The double dealing, the lack of a storyline, and that it all kind of revolving around he's doing something in the shadows, you know, he's doing something with the VR headset, he's doing something with the codes. It's all very kind of Casey orientated. Mm-hmm. And this is it. This is his storyline, really. And then whatever's going on with Diva, any one point, that's it now. That's all he gets. This is the crumbs off the table. And I think it's really interesting. When you guys were talking about, Liz, when you mentioned about people always being on Bray's case, that was Lex. But we don't really hear anything from Lex towards Jay, apart from his jealousy around having witnessed Siva and Jay together. That's how dialed back Lex's character is. And I know I keep mentioning mm-hmm. that every time when I'm on, but this whole plot line, this really boring plot line, well, I found it boring, this scam, like we've seen Lex and Casey operate these scams hundreds of times before to varying different levels of humor or success or even interest. This is not one of the most interesting ones, but the most interesting thing that comes out of this is that Pride, who up to this point has been sort of a bastion of good behavior, takes advantage of the situation and essentially robs Lex of his ill-gotten gains, but they were ill-gotten anyway. But yeah, it's crazy that you've got this character that so many people latch onto and really enjoy in the show. And this is the season where we had so many new people embarking into the series because it's a soft reboot. Mm-hmm. And yet you don't do anything with that character or the actor who you know is good.
It's so funny to me that this kind of low-level scam, it used to be given meaning as to why Lex was engaged in it. Because from the day we met Lex, he always had a higher plan, what he was going for. So when he comes to the Mallrats and he's he's just trouble, that's all he is. He's just the voice of dissent and making everyone's lives harder. He still had a plan. He wanted to take over. He wanted to run the mall. It's not because he's good at it or that he would have earned it. It's just because it's what he wanted. He wanted the power. And through the whole season, he never loses sight of what he's trying to do. And he even almost gets there. He's almost able to get rid of Amber and Bray. And he's just like, oh, yes, because he's working towards bettering his situation. So as annoying as he was, he had a plan. He had ambition. In season two, when he's in the funk of his depression, this kind of low-level scam was there to illustrate how far he'd fallen. It wasn't there to be like, oh, he's got a big plan. It was more like, look at Lex. He's so pathetic at this point in time that all he can do is nickel and dime for tokens in the marketplace, you know, and he was made fun of for this sort of thing because, you know, like he's trying to show Ebony, show her all the things he's able to get. And she calls him out as just a two-bit hustler because he doesn't have a plan because that's when he was at his lowest, you know? So for this to be treated as anything other than pathetic is sad, you know? It's like, okay, so what's the plan, Lex? Are you trying to build towards a better life for you and Siva? Like, he hasn't had a plan since this season began. He's not building towards anything. He has not tried to get his wife back. He's not trying to take down the technos. He's not using any of this back door action to get information from the technos. That would be interesting if he was doing that instead of getting credits. Mm-hmm. Like if he was, you know, using this to bribe info out of the technos, you know, then it wouldn't be such a farce. But it is, because it's like, okay, so what are you building towards, Lex? What is the goal here? Do you have one? You know, and this just becomes his personality. Just two but hustling for nothing more than a small profit. I'm a pirate with no greater goal. You know, I'm not even a pirate because I'm trying to feed my family. I'm just a pirate because easy money, I guess, you know, and it's just really sad and pathetic, you know.
I do wonder if it was done on purpose, though. Like, give Lex this many crappy storylines that make us feel like Lex is not the great guy people think he is, because all our attention needs to be focused on Jay and how we should adore him. It's like it sometimes feels like they purposely left out any form of decent storyline for Lex to the greater glory of Jay.
I see where you're going.
Not that it worked, but
the thing I would say there is, though, that Lex and Jay don't spend enough time together, whereas I would say that Jay and Pride, I would say yes to that, definitely. I think they dial up Jay and they dial down Pride to this point where, like, we loathe him, basically. Jay and Lex, they spend so little time actually sharing scenes or together at all that, yeah, I don't know, because you have to keep, because there's so little with Lex actually going on, that you actually forget he's in this sometimes until he suddenly pops up.
I guess that's what I kind of mean. It's like, we're not supposed to focus on Lex as a main guy character.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
He's just there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, at the end of the day, it's very clear that there's not a lot of thought given into anything the characters do. There really isn't a lot of thought put into what are the characters doing and why. It's just, what do we need the characters to be doing this episode? Which is why, you know, every other episode's whiplash of where the characters' headspace is. None of them have a real goal. None of them have, there's no through line for pretty much any of them. They're just floundering every episode until they have something else to do. And so nothing they do actually really matters. So I don't even think it's in benefit to, like, oh, let's make Jay look good by making the other characters look bad. It's more like they just don't care. They just got to give the characters busy work until the next plot point comes up.
Yeah. And for some characters, the busy work is easier to sort of paper over the cracks, because there is more busy work for some of the characters to do. But I think it shows very much with Lex, because there is nothing going on with him at all.
Yeah.
Apart from Siva.
They just don't know what to do with him. It's just come to that point. They don't want to involve him. So it's just, they're going to keep him, regress him really into his old self, because they can't push him forward. They don't want to push him forward. It was like, if you think about all the male characters we get over the next this last season and a half, that they focus on, it's like, what, Slade, Ram, Mega.
Yeah.
So there is bits to put on people, but they don't want to evolve Lex. That's all it is. It's just, and it's a shame.
To me, it feels like they just really didn't want to do anything with the characters. And it sometimes feels as if they just, like, the writers in this season just saw a summary of early season one.
Yeah.
And thought, okay, this is who these characters are, I guess.
But then you can't even credit them with that, because early season one Lex was a really interesting character. I mean, if we had him now, that would be really interesting, but it's just so dialed back. I mean, I'm going to be honest, I kind of wish he wasn't around, which I never thought I would say, but I'd rather not see him than see him like this.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
For all the impact he's had on the story, he might as well have died when Ved zapped him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it would have had more weight if he had.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, the only purpose he served is getting Siva away from the Technos. And it's like, you couldn't have thought of another way to get her to leave the group. Yeah. Yeah, he serves zero purpose in the story whatsoever.
Yeah.
He's just an extra body that they don't care
about. He's become, like, he was a main character. He's becoming a tertiary character. Like, think about season five.
He's become KC.
What's his big storyline? Like,
he doesn't have one.
Heck, he's not even a tertiary character. He's literally an NPC, you know? He's like, he's one of the city kids that we just get to check in on once in a while.
It's the worst glow down, I think, of any of the characters.
Pretty much. Like, I'm just stunned.
Because back in the day, a tertiary character was someone like Dal. You know what I mean? And we would complain that they're giving Dal very little to do. But Dal still had a personality. Mm-hmm. He still had impact in the mall. You know, that's what a tertiary character used to be. But now it's like you're just a background. You're just there when we need to fill out the scene.
Right.
And we'll just give you something meaningless to do. And there's no story for you whatsoever. Yeah. And it's like you did that with Lex, one of your primaries. Oh, boy.
It's such a weird choice. Especially when, because there are so few original characters still on the show, you kind of needed him to pull double duty. Because Celine and Lex and Ebony are the gateway characters into what the tribe used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that the three of them are more than capable of acting. Three good actors. We know that he can do this. We've seen him do it so much. And I'd argue, like, I think we'd all say his arc in season two elevated the tribe, really, because it was so emotional. And we saw him go on this incredible journey where he was remembering things and he had to work through things with Zandra, come to a place with Alice, and then get into that relationship with Tyson. We saw him go on this journey, and to see him now, and like you said, Lance, what is coming in season five is going to be even worse because he's essentially just comedy relief in against Ram in Liberty. He essentially is there just so that Ram could say you're an idiot every 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Season two, we didn't know how good we had it. That was the peak of their ability to write an ensemble and make sure every character had something to do. You know, even when we were kind of complaining about, like, we didn't know how good we had it. Because they juggled such a cast of characters and kept all of their stories intact. And there was a flow. We knew exactly what everybody was doing. We knew why they were doing it. Mm-hmm. We got emotional. We got upset. We got happy because everything they did mattered in some way. Mm-hmm. You know, everything they did mattered in some way. We would be upset because Jack wasn't being nice to Dal. You know, there's a whole through line of why Jack wasn't being nice to Dal, and we gave a crap about it. That was a tertiary storyline, and we'd get emotional about that crap.
Right? Yep.
I'd add to that. I'd say that the writing was so good that you could, if you gave somebody a season two line of dialogue and said, "Who said this?" you could tell from that dialogue who had said this line, even if you hadn't seen the scene, because every single character that we had in season two reacted to a situation in their own unique way and had their own speech patterns. Whereas now everyone sounds the same. They're all all of the Morats are reading off the same hymn sheet, unless it's Pride, because he's doing something dodgy and he wants to get the codes. And you've got Celine like, "I'm your cheerleader, Jay. You're amazing." Which, you know, all of that bit felt like B-roll that they would have given Amber on a really desperate when they had nothing to give her, you know? And yeah, like, what has happened? I think Lex is the figurehead for the downgrade, really, of all the characters, because it shows through in his character so much in this season and then in season five.
I think the biggest evidence that Lex is, it's so sad that none of us even have mentioned Pride, his role in this scene that we're talking about. Like, it matters that little. Like, none of us give a crap. Is doing this. We're too busy being like, "What happened to you, Lex?" Like, I think that says it all right there.
Yeah.
Well, I mentioned the Pride thing briefly, but only because I never miss an opportunity to get a boot into Pride.
I think on its own, it could be interesting in a better story. The fact that this character is this sneaky and actually looks worse than Lex, because at the end of the day, Lex isn't actually hurting anybody. But Pride, by doing this, is literally betraying somebody. That could be interesting in its own bubble. It's actually good. In a better story, it would be cool. It'd be a moment we'd be like, "Oh my gosh." But given the story we've had and Pride's characterization, I don't think a single one of us is surprised, nor do we care.
No, and you're right, because that's the sad thing here. To see Pride, the level of addiction gets so bad for him that he becomes this person that we don't recognise. Because this is not season three Pride, but that's the thing. That would have been a good allegory for addiction, to say, listen, it kind of takes away the core of who you are, and you kind of betray yourself over and over again just to get the next hit. And that would have been really interesting, and a sad character to sort of view it through, because he had so many sort of principles. He was so high-minded. He had such a sense of self, and for all that to just be stripped away because he's addicted to this game.
Given how Pride's been portrayed since the tail end of season three, this feels less like, oh my gosh, it's stripping away all the great things about Pride. It feels like it's more, oh, it's just giving him the freedom to be who he's always been. He's always been.
Well, I know that.
That's what it feels like. So it doesn't feel like a tragedy. It's more like, you know, what do they say? Like drunk words or just sober thoughts, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's all it seems like now, is that he's just able to let his douchebaggery show more clearly. This is who he actually is at his core. He's just a garbage person, you know. Mm-hmm. And the addiction just brings it out more. The whole nice guy thing, that's the facade. That's who he's not. Yeah. You know, he's got, he and Jay are like the same person in so many ways.
Oh God, can I just segue? Can I just ask you guys a question? Where's May? Because, like, nobody's checked in on her. We haven't seen her. Where is she?
She's still in bed coping because... and she nothing about that inflicted on the plot today. Pride wasn't watching her today. And so Celine didn't have to be insecure about that today. And, you know, so there was like, well, there's no reason to show her. So...
Okay.
See, that could have been interesting. Had she been going back to the game and Pride was just looking for her there, I would have been fine with him going after the codes, but just for him wanting to play the game, I just don't care.
I'm glad they didn't show her, because, again, the only reason they would have is to repeat what we've already seen. Him worrying about her, Celine feeling insecure about that. And it's like, we've already seen that. I don't need to see it again. This whole episode is already repetitive enough. Mm-hmm. I didn't need that. So if she's not going to impact the episode, I don't need her here. It's fine. I get it. She's in bed.
I'm just wondering if they could have had a scene where Pride uses May and says, oh no, I'm going to have to look after May. And then maybe Celine checks in on them and he's not there. And that gives Celine the inkling, oh, he's out playing the game.
That could have worked. But that would have required them to think about that.
Yeah, and they didn't, you know. I love how they want us to think that the way he talks to Celine is because of the addiction. It's like, he talked to her like this just because Amber was in the mall. And not, you know what I mean? This is just how he talks when he doesn't want to bother with somebody. It's how he talked to May. You know what I mean? The addiction has nothing to do with him being a dick. He just is one.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Celine worries about the whereabouts of Mouse, but not Sammy, who has joined another work party to get game credit. Although Sammy snaps at her for not being able to pull her weight, he later apologises and helps her. However, the two have their hard-earned credits stolen during the riots.
Well, where were you? You can't just hike off whenever it suits you. It's dangerous out there.
I went out for fresh air.
Well, it doesn't look like you found any. Look at you, you're filthy!
You tell me fresh air would make me grow big and strong, just like you.
So yeah, what did you think about Mouse and Sammy's relationship in this episode and how Mouse's absence is treated by the rest of the tribe?
Mouse was so cute in this. Mm-hmm. She was so sweet, and she's such a good little actress as well. And I love the way that Sammy started off being quite mean to her. And, you know, picking on her for being so small. I mean, as a small queen myself, you know, I very much sympathise with her, because I've tried to get a lot of fresh air over my life and I am still 5'1", you know?
I was just going to say that, honestly, Sammy and Mouse are the best sibling, quote unquote, sibling relationship we've gotten since Alice and Ellie. And that was season two, Alice and Ellie. And half of maybe season three. And they're the best friendship that we've seen since forever, since probably, yeah, since forever. They're like the best true friend, like reciprocal friendship. So that's what I got out of the scene. Like, they're just really good together, have great chemistry. And I also think, as much as I do like them together, and I like these scenes where, you know, one hand, Sammy's like an annoying big brother who's just like, oh my gosh, you know, you're so weak, you can't do anything. And then the next minute remembers himself and is like, I'm sorry, you're like half my size, later, let me help you, you know. And they're in it together, all that jazz and all that jazz. But it kind of ruins the whole addiction angle because neither Mouse or Sammy are addicted to the game. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, even these children aren't addicted to the game. They're not out in the streets causing problems. Mm-hmm. They're not attacking anybody. They're not jonesing for the game. They're just two little kids who really want their favorite sweetie right now and are willing to work to get it. That's literally all they are. They're two little kids who are determined. You told them, I'll buy you a Wii if you mow the lawn every day and take out the trash, and they're on it. They want that Wii. But that's not addiction, and it kind of just throws everybody else's behavior out the window, who are acting like a bunch of lunatics, when two little kids actually have a better handle on, well, I want to do this thing, you know, and so I'm willing to work for it. But they haven't lost their minds, you know, and so it does kind of screw up this narrative of like how nobody's really to blame for their actions because they're addicted.
Mm-hmm. It annoys me so much, though, that Celine seems to be going on, where's Mouse? Where's Mouse? And nobody cares about Sammy.
Yeah.
Well, Sammy is older. You know, Sammy's what, like, he's 11 or 12? And Mouse is 6. I'm going to feel differently if Mouse goes missing compared to Sammy. I'm just going to be straight on that. But I'm going to be more worried. And not to mention, the last time you lost that a Mouse, she had a weapon.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Good point there.
It makes sense that you'd be a little more concerned that you didn't found Mouse first thing in the morning. She's not even around for breakfast. What's going on? I would be more concerned about Mouse than I would be Sammy.
Yeah, but in the past, they would have worried about kids that age not returning.
Yeah, but if around the same age, yes. You know, I'm just saying, she's 6. There's just a difference. There's a difference.
That's like when Patsy didn't return home, Celine wanted to search the town for her, not for the baby, but for her.
Yeah, I'm not getting on Celine about this. It makes perfect sense that she's concerned about Mouse, especially after the last time she lost sight of Mouse.
Yeah, it's just the fact that she's not at all concerned about Sammy. It's like, where's Mouse? Where's Mouse? But never a, yeah, where do you think she and Sammy are? You know,
they could have mentioned him, but again, I'm not going to dock points on her for not being that concerned about Sammy. Then again, maybe it's because I don't like Sammy, so I won't lie. Some of my bias might be showing that maybe just like, I'm sure Sammy's fine. Where the frick is Mouse? You know what I mean?
I mean, I do like Mouse's, you just wait until I'm bigger. It's so adorable.
Not to mention, when Sammy has gone missing, he hasn't gotten into any trouble. So he clearly, you're just not, your brain doesn't go around like, he's the one I have to keep an eye on. I think we talked about this at a earlier time, some other season, I can't remember now. But there's sometimes when you pick your kids, you know which one you're going to be more worried about losing sight of. I know with my kids, I was always more worried about my youngest because she was the one I knew was going to get into some kind of trouble. My oldest one, not so much. But my youngest, I'd be like, holy crap, where is she? Where is she? That's the child that's going to blow up a toilet if I lose sight of her too long. If her brother went missing, it'd be more like I'd find him, you know, in the closet under a sheet reading, you know, something he wasn't supposed to read. You know, like that's what I'd find him doing. Her? I had to find her. She might, you know, hijack a car, you know, hold up a family for sweets. Like, I had to find her. So I'm just saying, I get it. I get why Celine's like, where is Mouse?
I mean, also, I think it's worth saying that we know that Mouse, from what her and Charlie basically said, that they were being kept as slaves by another tribe. Whereas we don't know what Sammy's situation was. He might have been in part of a tribe. He might have been a feral kid, but we know he probably didn't have it as hard as Mouse. So
fine.
Yes, they could have mentioned his name at least once,
yeah.
But I'm just saying I get why they're not that concerned about Sammy also not being around.
In a brief scene, we see Jara being given a pep talk by an AI version of herself.
Yes. But you must be aware of your sisters.
You don't think I can trust them?
You know you can't, but you can trust me. Together, we can defeat them.
What did you make, panel, of this curious introduction, given, of course, the show's later forays into artificial intelligence?
So this reminded me of those people that fall in love with ChatGPT bots. Do you know those ones when they like program their voices to be like mafia boyfriend, things like that? This is the energy that Jara is coming with. And I love it because she's so obviously unhinged. We see how truly unhinged Jara is. She's receiving compliments from herself and advice from herself. That this is a program she may have programmed herself. It's just, it's crazy. And I love it.
See, it comes across to me as Jara only trusting herself and no one else. She trusts her own opinion.
It's one of those scenes that, again, on its own, I think could be really valuable and quite heartfelt. I mean, what is she doing? She's giving herself a pep talk. It's just like looking in the mirror and giving yourself daily affirmations, especially on your worst days where you have to remind yourself, you know, I is good. I is smart. I is important. You know what I mean? Because of how, sorry, but that's what she's literally doing. She's doing the millennial pep talk in a mirror about, you know, when you're feeling really low and you need somebody, even if it's just yourself, to remind you there's a reason to get dressed. There's a reason to go out into the world and keep trying today. And so I think on its own, it actually could work because of how alone Jara is and that she doesn't have anyone in her corner. Nobody gives a crap about her. Nobody favors her. Nobody thinks she's worthy of anything. No one appreciates what she does. And the only person she can turn to remind herself to keep going, to keep working towards what she's working towards, is herself, you know? And the idea that, you know, and then you add that little tech flavor to it because, yeah, they're technos and this is what you do. Instead of just talking in a mirror to yourself and saying these things out loud, you literally just created a little program to say it for you, you know? By itself, it's actually really sad and kind of cute, you know? In the greater picture, because Jara's story doesn't make that much sense, it's like, it's kind of a throwaway, you know? But on its own, I think it's good. And I like the scene for what it is by itself, not in, you know, where it belongs in the whole story, though.
I also think I don't know if this ever comes back as well. I mean, that would have been something that would have been quite interesting to explore. As she becomes more isolated, she uses this AI more and more. But I'm not sure if it ever comes back. Do you guys know?
Yes. There's another scene where she turns to it, where she envisions herself as, I suppose you'd say, like a famous sociolite, and she's getting out of a car and she's all dressed up in the paparazzi. Mm-hmm. Everyone's calling her name, Jara. And even Lex is like hot for her in it. You know, so you do see, again, it could have been an interesting through line of Jara's isolation and her turning more and more to AI to feel like she has any value. I can't say it was done well, but yeah, it does happen again for Jara.
Interesting.
Because Jara really is the loneliest person we've ever met, you know, on the show. There isn't a single one person who really cares about it. I mean, Siva tried, you know, but even Siva was like, I fell in love with somebody, bye, you know, and she's very alone. And the guy she quote unquote loves doesn't prefer her, does not appreciate what she's bringing to the table and that she's devoted to him, you know, and prefers the wife who would put him in the ground if she could, you know, and prefers the wife that ran off with another guy, you know. So she really is the loneliest character. And I think they could have done more with her isolation and her loneliness and where it drives her. But they don't do much with it because, again, her story makes no sense. But
Oh, what could have been? This is like, you know, when they open up the door of like, and they say, this is what you could have won, but this is what you actually won. You know?
Yep. Oh, now I want to know what would have been behind that door.
Character development. Interesting dialogue.
What made me stroke on my drink?
Let's see what you did win. Oh, Lex has got another scam. Jarvis talking to herself on AI. Don't get me started on what's gone on with Ebony.
Meanwhile, the hospital is trashed by unknown vandals.
I don't understand. Who would trash a hospital? Who would stoop so low?
I've got a pretty good idea.
And Jay assumes it was a target because of his involvement, leading to a decision to leave in case the Moor becomes the next target, with the Moorats holding differing views. What do people think of Jay's decision to leave?
Oh my gosh!
Best decision ever!
Just go!
Just go, Jay!
Okay, I am fine with Jay deciding he is no use to these people. But it's not based on that. It's self-pity and making himself the main character. There is no evidence that the Technos would have anything to do with messing with the mall because of Jay. They do not give two ishes about you, Jay. Okay? They would not... Ram's not sending anyone to do this. You should know Ram would get at you another way. All right? He already got your woman, Jay. He's not trashing the hospital. All right? I think it's such a leap in logic to assume he's the reason this happened. It says so much about Jay's self-centered, like, point of view in the world. He's the only one that matters. He's the only one who would ever defect from the Technos because he's the only one who's has true intentions of what he wants to do with the world. You know, it's like, it's far more likely that the blues and the reds that are running around wreaking havoc mm-hmm. are the ones who trash the hospital. Okay. It's not like you have guards there. It's such a jump. And him leaving is, again, him just being self-pitying because he didn't get the things he wanted. He didn't get the girl. He needs someone to tell him he's valuable. Please don't leave, Jay. You know? And so it's just like, oh my gosh. Like, let this pathetic loser go then. Because it was just such a woe is me moment. And it was really, he looked so pathetic, assuming, I must be the reason. I need to leave, guys. It's me. And they're like, dude, why would you even think it's you? That there's so many reasons this hospital could have been trashed. So many reasons it could have happened. What makes you think you're the reason? So that you're important to someone's story? Is that why?
Well, he's just so self-obsessed, isn't he? Everything is about him. He's got that. He reminds me, you know, when you were a kid and you do that thing where you're like, I'm going to run away. And you'd say this to your parents and you'd like get a bindle and you'd do it in front of them or pack your suitcase in front of them. And you're waiting for them to say, oh, don't go. And you start to walk towards the door. You know, he's giving that energy, you know, and he's not even running away for a point. It's just for effect. And can I just also say, when he said, I need to say this, when he said about being, people still associate me with the Technos, really? Is it because you're still wearing their branded active weather? You know?
There's a simple way to be less associated with it.
Oh my gosh.
It's like he said, I work at McDonald's. And I've left recently, but I still wear the uniform every day.
Oh, so true. So friggin' true. Yeah, it's so pathetic. And it's like, again, on paper, you could have written this where maybe he really was a target. But the way it's written, it's like, it just makes him look so pathetic. And this is the most teenage thing he's ever said. And it's the same reason he had to go and stand in front of Ram and saying, I'm leaving. I quit. You know, it was like, he just wanted a response. You know, he wanted someone to mm-hmm. be shocked or upset that he was leaving. He wanted to see the look on Ram's face because he thought he was sticking it to him by leaving and didn't get the response he wanted. And this feels exactly the same. And it's more like he just needs constant validation and he's not getting any right now because he's not doing anything of use whatsoever. And he's not getting it. No one's singing his praises. And it's just like, I'd love it if his decision to leave had more depth to it. Like a real good reason why Jay's like if, what if he was causing danger to come upon the Mallrats or something, or put a target on their back, you know? But that's not the case. You know, this is not a noble choice you're making. You're just feeling sorry for yourself.
Yeah, it's just another, it just underlines how pathetic he is. And the worst thing is, like, it's played as if he's some hero. But like you say, we can all see this behavior for exactly what it is.
Like, even when Luke was in his most self-pitying and was like, Ellie, I need to leave, it at least made sense. Everybody treated him like trash. No one was willing to forgive him. And Ellie was being constantly judged for being with him. And he could see she's never going to have a life if she stays with me. I need to leave so she can have a hope of a future. I'm not going to find forgiveness here. I'm not going to find redemption here. Even though he's still feeling sorry for himself, his choice, his reasons for wanting to leave made more sense.
Yeah, and while he felt sorry for himself, he also felt like he deserved the blame.
Yeah.
It's not like Jay will ever hold himself accountable for anything.
No, and they'll never hold him accountable for anything.
I mean, come on, people, this is the man who was involved with kidnapping your wives and your friends.
Well, he decimated the city. There are tribes that no longer exist because of his actions, what he was involved in.
And he hasn't lifted a finger to help you get any of these people back or even find out where they went or what's being done to them. Nothing.
Well, he hasn't even done the bare minimum. That's the thing. You know, when they talk about, like, that's the bare minimum that you could actually do, he hasn't even done that. He's done absolutely nothing apart from tell people what he would have liked to have done or his plans of what he wanted to do and why this is actually a super really good thing that's happened, as opposed to this, like, basically a bomb going off inside everybody's lives.
Yep.
But, you know, his vision is this. He's done nothing. He's done nothing to help anybody.
No, I think the only person might have slightly helped was Ellie and no one else.
And then, I mean, and then, let's be honest, how did he help her? He got her sent off to a prison camp in the hopes that she might meet Jack, but we know that that actually doesn't even happen.
Which means he didn't even ensure she got sent to where she was supposed to get sent to.
He just told them
it opens up something worse, which is there are multiple prison camps. Because if he didn't send her to the one where Jack is, where did he send her? So there are multiple prison camps.
And wherever he sent Ellie, she literally got her memory wiped. Like, he just didn't give an F where he sent her.
No.
I don't think he ever assumed she'd return. So it would make him look good. But just saying, oh, she's going to Jack. Yeah, let's tell this girl who's off to, you know, meet her end or whatever. Just tell her that she's going to her old boyfriend, and then she'll seem happy-ish when she leaves, and everyone will not hate Jay for it.
And it never comes back. He never has to answer that.
Yeah,
I wish he did. I wish there had been a point where she got her memory back and she could have called Jay out on it.
Be like, where the frick did you send me? I never found Jack. I never found my sister. Like, where did you send me, dude? Like, no.
Yeah. Never. Because Ellie is the right character to do that as well, because she would call him out on that. But then we're back into missed opportunities, and this is what you could have won. Because on the other side of it, you think to yourself, it's okay them setting up all this stuff with Jay if at the end of it they puncture him. And they reduce him, they show him for exactly what he is to the audience and to himself. It's fine to build him up to this point and then for it to all basically be shown for what it really is. We never get that.
Yeah, there's no consequence. They wasted your time.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like when you get to the conclusion of the mystery box, when you open the box and see what's in it, then it's when it's like, that's whether it's going to work or not. Season 2 works for all its frustrations because of that ending. It was all building to that ending. Yeah. Every stupid choice the characters made led to that ending. They don't just win, they lose because of everything they did. And it's like, you didn't waste my time. All those frustrations had a purpose. Jay, there is just no purpose to him.
Jay has no purpose.
That brings us to our final thoughts of the episode. Meanwhile, Ebony tries to get Ved on side and learns the extent of the Techno's image manipulation abilities. After getting confirmation from Java that Amber's image is on the system and could be used by them, she finally realizes that Ram tricked her with the video of Jay and Amber together. She then fishes the disc from the still uncollected waste bin and arrives at the mall just in time to catch Jay as he's leaving, apologizes and begs him to watch the disc. So yeah, what would you make of this partial resolution to the storyline?
Still uncollected waste bin.
It's such a great line.
That's the best part.
In the techno headquarters, which is the level of Ram being a germaphobe, and she has a waste basket filled with tissues.
Fabulous. That's the best part. That's the best part.
Well, I mean, we talked about the glow down around Lex, but my God, does this not make Ebony look like the most stupid person in the room at all times? I mean, she had that wedding, the wedding, and at no point did she think, oh, he's just changed my dress and manipulated our surroundings. Do you think that DVD that he showed me might not have been real? Oh my God, it makes her look so bad.
And especially since she is the person who used a picture that wasn't about what it really was to manipulate Amber.
Yes, exactly. We've already seen him do this with Amber in front of her. And only now is she piecing it together because she's seen the same beach. Oh my God! And the thing is, you could say, right, because we know that Ebony's her own worst enemy when it comes to this sort of thing, because the jealousy makes her crazy. But that is such a stretch. This just makes her look like an ass. Absolute moron. And if
that's not jealousy,
I'd be like, no, I'm leaving. Sorry, what'd you say to me?
That's not jealousy making crazy. That's just jealousy making her batshit stupid.
But I mean, we know she's her own worst enemy when it comes to has no confidence when it comes to relationships with men. And she'll ruin her entire life over something like this. She would be in the comments section. That's who Ebony is. But this is just, I don't know. This makes her look really bad. Like, really, really bad.
Yeah, it does. And it's so funny. This could have worked if Ebony, the only way this could have worked is for Ebony to have no idea of what the technos were capable of. They made that mistake of letting her see Ram manipulate Amber's image into saying what he wanted Amber to say. And she's already aware that that can be done. And
that she's in the database.
Right. She already knows they've got Amber. She knows they had Amber, you know, and, the level of dumb here, the level of just bad writing here, so that there could be this stupid conflict between her and Jay, that's the only purpose it serves. And that makes it even worse. Like, it's even more egregious that's why this was even here, for these two to break up and have this separation for a short while. For why? Why? What purpose did their separation serve? It's not like Ebony did anything when she was married to Ram. You know, like it served no purpose except to keep these two separated for a little while. Like, it's not like either one of them did anything interesting or useful during the separation.
No.
Neither one of them even caused any damage due to the separation. So it was a pointless separation. There wasn't even any yearning in this. At least Bray and Amber yearned for each other, you know. You know, there was nothing, there was no reason to separate them, okay? And neither of them have shown during this separation that they're longing for each other. You know, they're not self-destructing because they don't have the other. Like, there's nothing. It no reason for this to exist. But this is what got me. I already thought Ebony was stupid for not catching on that Amber, they have Amber's image and that the Technos can manipulate people's images to do and say what they want. It's what she says to Ved. She's like, wait a minute. You mean they don't have to be in the same place at the same time? And Ved's like, yeah. And I'm like, are you, Ebony, are you telling me that not only did you not catch on that they could manipulate people, but you thought that Jay and Amber were in reality space together at the same time? That's what you apparently thought? That when Amber was hooked up somewhere, that Jay was hooked up somewhere, and they went to this make-believe beach together, that's what you really believed was happening? And you're only now realizing? I couldn't believe, I was like, Amber.
That doesn't make sense. Because of the timeline.
I thought at most that she just imagined that Jay was fantasizing to Amber's image.
Mm-hmm. Which that Jay was.
That was
what we were told in that episode.
Exactly, that he's fantasizing, so he came up with the scenario of he and Amber at the beach. But no, what she says implies she thinks they were in reality space mm-hmm. together at the same time.
Oh my god, so it's even dumber than
it's
we
even
actually...
It's even dumber!
Oh my god!
I was like, oh my... And you know what's sad? I actually like the scene between her and Ved. By itself... I enjoy their chemistry. I enjoy their dialogue. By itself, it's actually a pretty cool scene. And it's destroyed by everything else. Like, oh my. You're supposed to feel relief that she has found out the truth. And that she runs back to Jay just when he takes his earphones out again in his symbol of I'm quitting and I'm leaving it all behind. And she shows up just in time to stop them. And you guys know that I ship these two, and I could not dredge up a care in the world for this. I was like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
I mean, there's not much else you can say there, really, is there?
It felt like a fitting ending.
Yeah.
There's so many things they could have done with their breakup and what it drove the two of them to do. To create that tension, to create that longing, to make the audience wish they would figure it out and get back together. It's not like the writers are inexperienced with doing this. It's been mm-hmm. done in the past. The tension that comes from misunderstandings. It's the whole romantic comedy shtick. It's as old as the dawn of time. And they couldn't do it with these two, who have a ton of chemistry. But their separation served zero purpose except to get Ebony married to Ram, which also served zero purpose.
Yeah. Because I think we've actually seen less of Ebony since she's been married to Ram in terms of screen time. What do you think about it?
I mean, at bare minimum, when you separate a couple and you want the audience to care, at the bare minimum, you have to at least create angst over the separation.
Yeah.
You're torturing your audience the whole time. Like, oh my gosh, when are these two going to get it together? You know, even Bramber managed to do that. Even though their separation was one of the dumbest reasons on the planet for existing, there was a lot of angst for people who were like, come on, you two, come on, you two. There was a lot of tension every time they were together, alone. The things they said to each other, the way they were looking at each other. So when they finally get it together, even though for me it wasn't satisfying because there was no apologies, Amber. Anyway, the point is... It served the bare minimum of making their audience jones for them to figure it out and admit that they still love each other and they want to be together. There's nothing of that happening between Ebony and Jay.
No, and the frustrating thing there is that we have actually had a couple in this season, season 4, that had a similar dynamic, which was in the early episodes with Jack and Ellie, mm-hmm. where it was clear they were on the road to getting back together and the audience were willing it to happen. And then Jack gets kidnapped. And that kind of ends that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So they can do it.
I honestly think people felt more for, you know, Ved fighting for Chloe and Siva and Lex fighting, you know, I honestly think people cared more about the angst there, you know, like, oh my gosh, this misunderstanding, are they going to figure things out? But Ebony and Jay, who are supposed to be like the top billing couple of the season.
Yeah.
It's like they totally forgot that these two are supposed to be angsting for each other and longing for each other and tortured over this misunderstanding that led to their breakup. But no. They
don't seem to give it any space in their heads at all.
Nope.
When they're not together, they don't think about the other person.
And now that I know Jay and what he is as a person, when she comes to him and is like, I made a mistake, I'm sorry, whatever, the smile he gives her isn't one of a man who's like, oh, thank God, you know, I've been torturing myself, you know, you wouldn't talk to me and I couldn't have been able to sleep. No, his smile is creepy.
Yeah.
It is.
It's one of those, there she is. I knew she would.
I got her. Right. I got her. I can do whatever I want to her now because she's sorry. She left me and she came back and she's sorry.
She chose me and not Ram.
I was like, that's a disturbing smile, Jay. That's not the smile of a man who's relieved that the love of his life just came back.
Again, it makes you long for Jay to have been the villain. Because I really think that if Jay was the villain,
it would have been a great villain.
Chef's kiss. We could have got these things. Yeah, great villain. And we could have got these like Easter eggs that would have shown us, oh my God, we could have gone back and watched it and been like, oh, I've just seen it. I've seen the smile he gave her. Even Ebony's wrong-footed by this guy. Nah.
We can't have nice things.
We can't have anything nice. Do you think, though, that they separated them because they didn't know what to do with them as a couple? Because everything that we know about them, none of this is going to pay off. And yeah.
No, they just, I guess, just it was the most interesting thing they could think of to cause friction in the relationship. Mm. Give them a dumb misunderstanding. You know, at least as dumb as the Bray Amber one is, and you guys know it's unforgivably dumb. Mm-hmm. At least I get what drew that to happen. The actress literally died. She was killed off. You know, like she left the show. They killed her character. They had to come up with some reason that she stayed away. They, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's like they could have come up with something better, but at least there was something behind the scenes that led to it. I don't know what the purpose was of splitting Ebony and Jay up.
Mm. Well, I've had a conspiracy theory for ages that they've not really committed to this relationship because I think quite early on they decided that they were going to pair him with Amber and that this is just we're going to sort of mislead the audience, get them to root for this relationship, and then we're going to say, oh, Ebony's the one that ruined it all. But yeah, because yeah, like you say, you don't feel anything. You should feel something here. This should be huge. And also, you know, we've only ever seen Ebony admit she's wrong a handful of times. And most of those times were when she was being, we get that when she comes out to Bray and she tells him that she loves him and he leaves her and she's completely devastated. And then she puts the armor back on. Mm-hmm. But that was a really vulnerable moment for her. So we have never seen her be vulnerable like this. It's a handful of times. And the fact that she obviously runs all the way over and is there to find him and is like, I was wrong. This is huge from Ebony. This should be, you know, you're picking your drawer off the floor and it doesn't feel that way.
Nope.
Yep. Their whole conflict was lazy. Their breakup was lazy. How they behaved after the breakup was lazy. And they're coming together because of that. It doesn't have the impact that it should. Mm. And I say that as an Ebony J shipper, man. This should work for me. I like these guys together. I liked them from the start. I should care. I should be like, yay. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. Heck, whatever.
But it's their chemistry. It's the chemistry between Meryl and Jane that I think, you know, makes this relationship really sing. Because they are like a chemistry factory. When they look at each other, when they're in the same room with each other, I mean, wait.
Cool. That brings Series 4, Episode 39 to a close. Thank you very much to the panel, and you can show your support by clicking on that like and subscribe and following us on all the major platforms. You can also leave us a comment or get in touch if you'd like to take part in a future episode of the podcast yourself. Just search for The Tribe Look at UK or Conversations on Eagle Mountain. You can also throw us a donation. Just head on over to buymeacoffee.com/thetribe.co.uk. And we'll see you next time for Episode 40. Until then, bye.
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 Bye.